Your source for everything paranormal.
Para-X.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Bright the cheeks and warm the heart, for tread the circle thrice about to keep unwelcome spirits out. Bide within the law you must, in perfect love and perfect trust. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Merry meet, everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. My guest tonight is Nicholas Pearson, and he's got a new book that many of us have been anxiously awaiting. It's called Flower Essences from the Witch's Garden, Plant Spirits in Magical Herbalism. Now, Nicholas is a flower essence practitioner and researcher whose love for plants grew alongside of his love for the mineral kingdom. Known for his work with crystals and Reiki, he's also a practicing witch and occultist, and internationally acclaimed author and presenter. A couple of his books are like Crystal for Karmic Healing and Crystal Basics, and anybody that listens to the show, you've got a lot of stuff that you've known about his books, and this is just another great one. Now, I know I sound like a broken record, but for those of you who are listening in for the first time, questions and comments for the guests are always welcome, but you have to be in the Para-X chat room listening to the live show. And you can join us at paraxradionetwork.com if you'd like to participate. And for those who are listening to the podcast, I've just added a list of upcoming guests to my website, Stirring the Cauldron page. So if you see a guest or topic that really interests you and you might want to come in and ask a question or two, you'll have ample time to remind yourself to get there. Just go to marlabrooks.com and click the Stirring the Cauldron page in the menu. All right, let's get down to business. I'm going to try to get back into the chat room. We had a power outage, and now the chat room's not letting me back in yet. So hold your questions until I get there. But Nicholas, so glad to have you back.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be back with you.
I just wait for you to write these books, and then I get really happy. What can I tell you? You know, I've got so much I want to talk about, but I don't even know where to begin. But I think explaining that this book is a practical guide to using flower essences for a number of different ways on traditional Western magic practices, and that's a good start. And, you know, when I sent you the banner for this week's show the other day, you mentioned that this was your witchiest book so far. So I guess what I have to ask is, what took you so long, and is that so far comment tease something you're letting us know of things to come?
Oh, I kind of like where your head is at with that. well, you know, I have a lot of tools in the toolbox. Some are definitely witchier than others, and I think it was just a matter of letting the tools out when they were ready to be here. I like to think that every book has its own spirit, its own consciousness, just like everything else does, whether that's a flower or a stone or, you know, my troublesome computer, whatever it is, there's that spark to it. And many years ago, when I felt overwhelmed with ideas for, you know, what to actually pursue, one of my dear friends in the crystal world, her name is Marilyn Twin Trees, and she's the co-author of a really fun series of books called Stones Alive. She invited me to just take a step back and tell all those prospective books to say, take a number and just let them wait in line and come up to me present their number and say, all right, it's my turn. Let's work together. And that's kind of how I've done it ever since. And so finally, the really witchy stuff is at the deli counter and I'm like ready to serve them.
I'm glad. I really am. I mean, because, you know, we're waiting for this. And you know, as you said, it's the witchiest book that you've done. But I'm sure there's a few more that are getting in line on their own and will be forthcoming. This is kind of where you're just kind of getting your toe in the water, right?
Yeah, I mean, Stones of the Goddess definitely had elements of witchcraft and ceremonial magic in there. That was definitely kind of what I was leaning into, but the way it evolved wasn't necessarily what I pictured. And that's okay, because again, every book has its own spirit. But I'll tell you, like down to the title of this book, everything was just kind of divinely inspired. I was in the shower one morning at the start of the pandemic, and it hit me, flower essences from the witch's garden. I'm going to write a witchy book about flower essences because I don't think there is such a thing. Mm-hmm. And so I did.
You know, the shower is a very good place to get inspired because, I mean, it's happened to me too. I was thinking of doing another spell book just off the top of my head because I'm still waiting to hear if they're going to give me the oracle deck with the plant spirits. But in the meantime, you know, I could be working on doing spells and I couldn't think of another name, you know. I mean, everybody's got a spell book name, you know, whatever. And one day I was in the shower and it popped into my head. So there's something about water and cleansing. I mean, it probably cleanses your head and then you can think better in the shower.
For maybe, sure. And I mean, water's so integral to the practice of flower essence therapy, and it just felt like the right place, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, your book is dedicated to your grandmother, who taught you to appreciate plants of all kinds. So how old were you when she first took you into the garden and started sharing her knowledge and appreciation of plants?
And, you know, I'm not really sure. It was just my grandmother always had things growing in the garden. That's just as simple as it was. And if it didn't have really resplendent flowers or at least very fragrant ones, it didn't really matter much else about the plant. She was all about flowers. So, you know, I remember the Jatropha and I remember her love of Tibetina or princess flower and bird of paradise. And even citrus was great because they had such fragrant flowers. She loved gardenia and rose. Mm. And, you know, those are still some of my favorite scents to this day. I can close my eyes and imagine that I'm leaning in to a freshly opened gardenia and I'm right there at my grandparents' house standing in their backyard. And that's, I mean, if that isn't an act of magic, I don't know what is.
You know, it's true because certain flowers do bring out memories. I mean, some good, some bad. Every time I hear about gardenias, my junior high school graduation, they made all the girls wear gardenias in their hair. And it was getting warm in California about that time. And the graduation was in the auditorium. And if that didn't smell like a funeral parlor, nothing did, ever. So now every time I see a gardenia, that's where it takes me back. So, you know, we all have those thoughts. I mean, some are better than, you know, because there were people talking. The adults were saying, oh, my God, this smells like a funeral parlor. You know. But yeah, and that's nice because you don't do it consciously. It's a subconscious reaction, isn't it? That certain plants will put you in a certain mood or a certain memory.
For sure. And I think that speaks to the really primordial relationship we have with the green realm. And it kind of opens the door to experiencing bud and blossom and petal as more than just your standard kind of ingredients in magic or medicine or cuisine or whatever it is we're using them for. And that's kind of like the crux of this concept of like working with flower essences in a magical sense, because flower essences aren't your standard kind of botanical product. There's something different. There's something a little bit more abstract. And that was part of what drew me in.
Well, I mean, this is an obvious question to some and maybe not to others, but what exactly are flower essences?
Yeah, thank you. So a flower essence is a lot like, if someone is familiar with crystals, maybe they're aware of like crystal elixirs or gem waters and things like that, where you kind of imbue the energy of a crystal or gemstone into your water. And then you use that resulting infusion for something magical or therapeutic. And flower essences work in a similar way, in as much that they're really dilute solutions that are imprinted with the soul patterning or the consciousness or the energy, we'll say, from a plant or some other botanical ingredient. Now they make these kinds of vibrational remedies from more than just flowers. You can have them made from mushrooms and landscapes and astronomical events and colors and all sorts of fun things. But it all started with a gentleman by the name of Dr. Edward Batch, who was an immunologist and bacteriologist, and eventually he became a homeopath. And what he strove for was a system of healing that really worked at the soul level. And so after being deeply inspired by the works of Paracelsus and other medieval alchemists, he decided that their use of morning dew to kind of bring this healing virtue to the soul was something he wanted to explore. And he started collecting the dew from flowers, realized that it was so labor intensive, he was never going to be able to produce enough of something to help the masses. And so he started to create something that we call the solar method or solarization today in the process of flower essence therapy, where you cut fresh flowers, you float them atop some fresh spring water, or at least the very best water you've got, in a clear glass container under the full sun. And after a few hours, it's almost like taking a photograph where the water is the film. And then the light is the thing that captures the whole process. So you've got sunlight, you've got the bowl acting as the camera, it is filled with its film, which is the water, and then the image we're taking the picture of is actually the soul of those flowers. And what you do is you end up diluting that a couple of times before you use it. A couple drops of that initial tincture will get diluted a little further, and then you'll take a couple drops of that liquid and once again, dilute it for everyday use. But because of that, flower essences are similar to homeopathy superficially, because they go through this process of dilution to refine or potentize them. But they're not full of botanical ingredients. It's purely just the energy or the essential nature of the flower that is captured within that water. That's what drives the whole kind of mystical thing. We have ideas for how it might work scientifically, but we can't measure them. There's not enough empirical data to tell us that's what the mechanism is. There's enough empirical data from pretty rich, robust clinical trials that tells us they work. Scientists just don't know why. And I mean, that's magic.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah. Why no one has tried to kind of incorporate these into magical herbalism on a wide scale, I'm not sure, but I know it's something that occultists and magicians and witches have done. There just hasn't been a working manual till now.
And your book is so comprehensively wonderful in all aspects of that. I can't say enough nice about it. But when did your journey with flower essences begin? I mean, of course, appreciated plants and all that, but when did the essences part come in?
When I was a senior in high school, my dear friend Rita, who owned the local metaphysical shop in town, I'd been coming for, I don't know, 6-7 years by that point. I really was enamored with all things related to rock and gem and all things kind of mystical. But one of her practices was flower essence therapy. And she used the 38 remedies created by the founder of the system, Dr. Edward Batch, and saw, clients and customers on the regular. But because I was getting ready to go away to school, and I'm sure she observed maybe some of the early manifestations of anxiety kind of rearing its head in my life, she offered to give me a blend of flower essences to take with me to school to kind of ease the transition. And I was like, sure, sign me up. And we have a chat. She selects some remedies based on our conversation. She mixes this magical little brown dropper bottle full of stuff for me, and then proceeds to tell me that I should take it, maybe 3-4 times a day, just a few drops at a time. Mm-hmm. And, I follow the directions and don't you know they work? But then when I tried to figure out what was actually in that bottle, there was no good explanation. Now, I was already teaching classes on crystals. I was already doing some pretty woo-woo things. But when my skeptical mind would come into play, you know, my science-trained brain would try to analyze it, it couldn't make sense of how this bottle of water and a little bit of alcohol to keep it from growing mold was going to change my life in any way. And yet, in spite of my skepticism, that little bottle full of nothing but water and some vodka changed my life. There was something in that water that really worked almost like a tuning fork for an out of balance emotion. And so for a couple of years, when I'd go back and forth from school to my hometown in Southeast Florida, we'd have a chat and we'd kind of refine my blend. And then I'd fill up a new bottle and go back into the world. And we did that for a number of years. And it was just a really wonderful way to help me kind of process what being a grown-up was like.
What a good way to come. I mean, some of us or some other people get to know what it's like to be a grown-up the hard way. I mean, not that maybe you still didn't, but that was a glorious part way to get there.
Agreed.
Yeah. All right. So part of the process of making essences is deciphering the language of flowers, which just happens to be the name of one of your book's chapters. But let's talk about the importance of understanding and learning about the language of flowers.
Yeah, this is something that I think was probably the most fun for me to put together in the book. So if anyone's heard me talk at length about rocks or if you're familiar with crystal basics, you probably know that I like to take things apart and understand why. Mm-hmm. Why do we know this about a crystal? How do we know what it does? And I try to kind of examine that symbolic language that's encoded right there in front of us. And so I had to do the same thing with flowers. And there are really long traditions of taking clues from the natural world to better understand the medicine and the magic of something. And in the Victorian era, we had something called the language of flowers, also called floriography, which was a means of sending kind of covert messages and bouquets mm-hmm. and flower arrangements. And yes. Every bloom has its own kind of cultural context, and you can kind of tell a story that way. Now, some of that is based on folklore, some of that is based on what was then modern kind of interpretations, and other bits of it stem from a really, really ancient doctrine that's called the doctrine of signatures. And although this was kind of codified in, we'll say, the kind of classical era of Greece and Rome, it is something that is used by herbalists around the world. Even some of the names of plants that we use today are the result of this idea of the doctrine of signatures, which says that for everything in the cosmos, there is some kind of symbolic nature or correspondence that indicates how it is connected to other things. So, you know, if we look at liverwort, for example, it gets its name because the shape of the leaves is kind of trilobate or three-lobed, like a liver. And wouldn't you know, the phytochemicals in those leaves are really good for treating liver function. And it's right there encoded symbolically. So when we work with flower essence therapy, there are clues that we can take from getting to know the plant when we're making an essence that will kind of indicate how it might influence our psyche and our spirit. Part of that might come from the number of petals, the shape of them, the overall stature of the plant. Maybe it comes from the color or combination of colors in the flower, the shape of the leaves, and all these kinds of other elements that we see in its botanical story. But its botanical story is woven intimately into its spiritual story, into its kind of cultural archetypes, into its magical energies. And so when we get to know a plant through this language of flowers or through the doctrine of signatures, it's usually a pretty clear indicator of how it's going to work on that vibrational level when we make it into a flower essence.
You know, somebody just asked a question from the chat room and it made me think because she was wondering if you address flower teas in the book. But you know what? Isn't an herbal tea kind of a flower essence?
So in this sense, the botanical remedies that are in the book are completely vibrational in nature. So we're not actually infusing or decocting something at a level to kind of extract the compounds. Your water won't change color at all. So it's not at all like making a tea. And because of that, flower essences are extraordinarily subtle, but deeply powerful, because they kind of work at that most subtle level of us. So when we're talking about using, like, for example, a rosemary flower essence, it's not the same as, you know, taking dried or even fresh rosemary and adding it to boiling water and ingesting that. Instead, it's this, like, just the soul qualities of the plant. As a result, we get something that's not going to interact with any other medicines we might be taking. It's not going to have any impact directly on the physical body. That's not to say there aren't subtle impacts on the mind, the heart, the spirit that don't translate to the physical body. Mm-hmm. But it's quite different to making a tea.
Okay, yeah. Okay. And medicine and magic have always kind of gone hand in hand. So that kind of makes sense. It's just all about what you're using it for and how you're going to use it. So that's good. But there's another question from the chat room. It says, is a witch's garden, because we spoke of that in the title, is a witch's garden simply one that a regular garden is, that a witch tends to, or is a witch's garden one that is made up of specific plants that witches use in witchcraft?
Well, you know, I think the answer is yes to both. you know, poetically, I think the title, the intention behind the title was to talk about how flower essences have many layers to them. Although they were conceived of as a means of complementing modern medicine in the 1930s, they are so much more than that. People use them to facilitate shamanic practices. People add them as materia magica to spellcraft and ritual. People use them as meditative aids. They have gotten to a point as a practice at large that they're just more than a simple medicinal kind of remedy. And when I came up with the title, when it came to me in the shower, it was this idea that we're not just making plants into these remedies, you know, at random. We're really intentionally curating a garden of magic. Now, that garden can be populated with whatever plants are meaningful to you, as the practitioner, as the witch. So, you know, my witch's garden has things like foxglove and datura and some other baneful remedies, but it's also got things like papyrus and hibiscus and flame lily, because those are the magical allies that I know and love. Those are things that have meaning to me and my household. So in a sense, the witch's garden is any garden tended by the witch, but every garden holds magic at its heart. And so it's just a matter of being able to look with those magical eyes.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, the essences can be done for healing, that can be done for spells, it can be, you know, part of rituals, and you cover all of those things in the book. And you also, with everything, because when you start reading the book, you really want to get doing it, you know, oh, I can do that, I want to do this and that, whatever. Some people aren't in a place where they can find some of the tools and stuff that they need to begin. So what kind of things would somebody need in the, you know, the process of making essences? Is it a difficult one? Does it need lots of supplies or a degree in botany? Any one of those three?
You know, the great news is that there are so many flower essence makers out there. In addition to, you know, their original system of 38 remedies, there are probably tens of thousands of options available to us through the internet and at health food stores, metaphysical stores. So if we don't have the ability to make them ourselves, there's a wide selection out there that we can certainly add quite inexpensively to our toolbox. But if we wanted to make essences on our own, we're going to need a glass bowl and some good quality water. We'll need some sort of preservative. Maybe that'll be apple cider vinegar or brandy or vodka or glycerin or some combination of those things. And then we'll need containers that we put the finished liquids in. So maybe a big bottle or jar to hold the mother elixir, a mother tincture it's called. Mm-hmm. And then some dropper bottles to make the stock bottle and then the dosage bottles. So nothing is really complicated. You need something sharp to cut the flowers if you're cutting them. There are ways to make them called living methods or indirect methods. Mm-hmm. Kind of like with gem elixirs, not everything is safe to go in your water. If you really want to work with water hemlock or poison hemlock, you probably don't want to put that in your mother tincture. You want to do an indirect method. So, you know, there are ways around some of the requirements, but the book kind of walks you through everything you're going to need, talks to you about the different options for tools you might consider, and helps you understand the kind of pros and cons of each approach to making essences. So you can figure out what's going to work best for you.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I would think, and, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but doing it yourself would be more, well, you'd get better results than if you get something retail, just as, you know, with crystals, they're yours, you know, you consecrate them, you cleanse them and to make them your own. But anything you buy retail kind of needs to be cleansed and consecrated. And I just think that, you know, when you do it by yourself, it's better, but I might be wrong.
One of the most important ingredients to making an essence isn't a physical object or a substance. It's the mindset, and it's also the space or the opportunity. Mm-hmm. So we might not all have the access to be able to do that. We might not all have an unadulterated part of nature to go out into with a profusion of blooms to make an essence. So in those circumstances, I mean, commercially prepared essences are wonderful. You might also really want to work with something that just doesn't grow in your region, or maybe you have a black thumb and everything you plant dies. I'm like that with sage. I cannot keep Salvia officinalis, like common garden sage, cannot keep it alive to save my life. All sorts of other strange and unusual relatives of that particular plant we're good with. I just can't do that. So if I want to work with a sage flower essence, I'm going to use a commercially prepared one, because I know that the maker has taken the time, the care, has really connected to the spirit in a very intentional way to invite that energy into the water. Because without that right mindset and without that conscious and direct connection to the spirit or consciousness of the plant, all we really have is an infusion too weak to do anything. Because it's the consciousness of the plant that makes an essence, not the physical body of the plant. It's not like making a tea or a tincture. It's something really a little bit more ethereal. So it's okay to leave it to the professionals. There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, and here's the other question. How do you know that you're getting something that's pure and something that's made for it instead of somebody who brings a whole lot of little bottles and puts colored water in there and sells them as essences?
I mean, for the most part, flower essence producers are a pretty interesting group of people who are really committed to their craft. There are some really well-known brands or makers that, I mean, they've got the clinical data from studies they've participated to show that their essences are effective and that they work. And for the most part, my experience has been that many of them are really eager to connect and help people. So I like to believe that people who are that invested in other people's well-being are doing it the right way. And the proof of the pudding is in the eating, as they say. So you can take the essences and see your life change over time. You know that it's working. So if you stick to the big, I mean, big brand being a relative term for such a niche field, stick to the well-trusted makers, people like Flower Essence Services, Healing Herbs, the Nelson Batch Company, Alaskan Essences, Australian Essences. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I probably have 3 or 4 dozen different suppliers that have produced all the essences I worked with to write this book and beyond.
Mm-hmm. Well, and all those things are in the book as well. So, all the people that you know that are in there are going to be good, and so people can do that. All right. Well, I don't know where this first half hour went, but we've got to take a break. And everybody, stay with us, and we'll be back shortly.
Stirring the Cauldron will be right back, so don't go away. If you end up with webbed feet, remember, you've been warned. missed an episode of Stirring the Cauldron, then be sure to check out MarlaBrooks.com and check out the archive. And while you're there, check out Marla's weekly Witch's Oracle card reading. Explore the site to find many great resources, such as information on tarot, oracle readings, metaphysical consultations, and links to all of Marla's books. That's MarlaBrooks.com.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening in to Stirring the Cauldron. I just wanted to give you a quick heads up, if you don't already know, about the free weekly Witch's Oracle deck readings that I post on my website every Monday. Now, let me answer the age-old question before you ask it, which is, well, how do I know it's for me? And the answer is pretty simple. If you weren't meant to see it, you wouldn't know it was there. So if you're curious about what the week has in store for you, pop on over to MarlaBrooks.com every Monday and scroll down on the homepage, and there it will be. If you like tonight's episode of Stirring the Cauldron and the Archive Podcast as well, take a look at the show's YouTube channel and check out the dozens of shows that are there just waiting to be heard. New shows are added each week, and while you're there, why not subscribe? It's free. And if you click on that tiny little bell icon at the top of the page, you'll be notified when new shows are available. Just go to youtube.com and then type in Stirring the Cauldron Para X and the link will appear. Just like magic.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
My guest is Nicholas Pearson, and we're talking about his new book, Flower Essences from the Witch's Garden. Now, we've got another chat room question that's kind of similar to what we were talking about, but slightly different. They said, if we don't have certain plants in our gardens and we need to buy some plants in order to make a specific essence, is there a need to cleanse and consecrate those plants that we bring home as we would with crystals?
So, I think the thing to consider is that when we make a flower essence, what we're really aiming for is this relationship with the plant spirit. And to produce a good quality essence, we need quite a lot of flowers, enough to kind of cover the top of our bowl of water. So, you know, it's not like we can go buy cut flowers or dried flowers. We really need a good, healthy example of this plant in bloom. We might be lucky enough to find that at the garden center or at a, you know, nicer plant nursery. But chances are we cultivate that over time. We plant something small, we let it grow for a long time, and eventually it blooms, and then we're going to kind of create that essence. So it's not so much the plant that would need cleansing, because it's its own being. It's going to kind of self-regulate. But your other tools, those are definitely worth cleansing physically, because, you know, if we're going to make something we're going to ingest, we want to make sure there is no trace of anything else on it. So I always take boiling water to sanitize my scissors, my scoops, my funnels, my bowls, anything that's going to touch the essence or the plant itself. And then I also like to kind of consecrate or bless my water before I use it. And I give it time and space to breathe. I use tap water, but I filter it. I treat it very, very well. And then when it's ready, I can make that essence, just so long as the plant has enough flowers and is willing to participate.
And okay, so this just popped into my head because I was out in the garden yesterday and my pink jasmine has bloomed its head off the last few weeks. So now, you know, the blossoms are wilting. Some of them are brown, but they smell still wonderful. And I was kind of like pushing, you know, with my hand, and it was raining down these old blooms. Are they, do they work? I mean, if I had to do something with jasmine, for example, because it was, I felt kind of bad shaking them all loose and going to the ground.
I mean, those kind of spent blooms could certainly be dried and used in traditional herbalism when we make flower essences, because we're trying to capture like the concentrated dose of soul energy of the plant. We want to use young, fresh flowers. There's some makers who actually pick them just before they're even fully open, so like right on the cusp of becoming. And I think a good rule of thumb is that we try not to take, certainly not more than half. I try not to take more than maybe a quarter or a third of all the blooms off of a plant. And if that's not going to give me enough, I won't make that essence, or I'll make a very small amount in a very tiny bowl so I can get away with that. But once the flowers have kind of begun to wither, or once they've kind of run their course, they might have other uses, but not in flower essence therapy.
Good. So I've got potpourri coming up then.
Yes.
That'll work. Yeah. Pink jasmine, it doesn't ever lose its smell. And that's lovely. Let's talk a little bit about the nature of spirits and the spirits of nature, because they're a very important part of the process. And you include how to invoke plant spirits with essences. And what caught my eye was that, of course, there's always offerings needed. But for some reason, I always thought offerings would be tangible. But in this invocation that you talk about, the offering is our breath. And when I read on, it made a great deal of sense. Can you speak about that for a minute?
Absolutely. And I want to give credit where credit is due. The first time I heard of this was actually from my friend and teacher, Christopher Penzack, who wrote the foreword to this book, and he's the author of dozens of brilliant books.
Yes.
And, you know, we have this really inseparable relationship to the green realm. If we didn't have things that photosynthesize, then we wouldn't have oxygen in our atmosphere in sufficient quantities for us to exist. So we wouldn't be here either. But those things, like plants and algae and other beings who engage in photosynthesis, they metabolize carbon dioxide, which is what we exhale. So a simple offering that we will always have enough of is our breath. And just as they give off oxygen for us to inhale, we can give off carbon dioxide for them to transpire and breathe in their own way. And it's a really simple, potent, effective, and meditative way to connect to plant spirits. And I enjoy that it is also equitable and accessible for us all. We've all got breath. It doesn't cost us anything. It doesn't require something fancy. You don't need to be trained to breathe. You just do it.
And you're giving them a part of yourself, as, you know, so that's even more important in a sense, rather than just handing over something. Your essence is going to them.
And absolutely, I like
that.
It is.
Yeah, I like that. All right, so what are some of the practical uses for plant essences? Most common or you know, is it for healing or you know, basically what would people think that they would use it for if they're not savvy in
for
that
sure.
kind of thing? Yeah.
So if you go to see your average flower essence therapist or flower essence fan, the first thing you learn to do is to find something that kind of matches the emotional pattern that you're trying to release or overcome. And you can take them orally, put a couple drops straight down the hatch. Maybe you'll add some to your drinking water or another beverage or even your food. You can apply them topically. You can diffuse them in your space. You can add them to the bath. You can put a couple drops right on your hands and inhale, although you're not going to get any aroma because, again, it's not a botanical chemical. It's just the energy kind of imprinted there. It's a way to kind of draw in that life force into your whole being. And that's how we might consider working with essences from a more therapeutic context. But I noticed a few years ago that I was dealing with some homework in the Temple of Witchcraft that I was in the mystery school I was enrolled in. And I really wanted to work the particular plant ingredient and I just didn't have it. But you know what I did have? I had a flower essence made from a very close relative of that plant. And, you know, superficially, they look pretty darn similar, same genus, different species. And I thought, well, what the heck? Why don't I just add a couple drops of the essence? Because if what we're really doing when we practice magical herbalism is invoking the plant spirit anyway, then something that is a kind of dilute physical substance but super concentrated spiritually should do the job just as well. And wouldn't you know, it did. So I started working with very tiny quantities of flower essences and things like compounding incense and anointing tools and people, adding them to the chalice during ceremonies, diffusing them in my space to create sacred space before ritual or meditation or healing. And I just started to incorporate them the ways I would other forms of plant spirit medicine. And that was such a great way to open the door, because now I had access to a lot more things that I couldn't go find at the local metaphysical store or in the local herbal apothecary, because there are flower essence makers around the world that are producing these remedies, and I can get them thanks to the, you know, click of a few buttons.
Mm-hmm. That sounds really good. Got another question from the chat room. She says, being a cat lover, do you have any special purposes for what we refer to as catnip to use on humans?
I mean, catnip flower essence, I'm sure, is used. That would be something I'd really want to look up, because it's not one that I've had in my personal pharmacy here, we'll say. but, you know, catnip is a member of the mint family. And a lot of mints kind of work on the mental level. They have a very kind of mercurial quality to them that helps kind of balance an overactive mind. One of my friends writes that catnip essence helps bring people together, can be good for examining common bonds and friendships. We might use it if we are uncomfortable in social situations to kind of help us kind of relax into that, kind of in the way that, you know, people use catnip as a dried herb as a kind of calming effect. It's got the opposite effect on people as it does on cats. But yeah, I haven't really explored working with it as an essence myself.
Well, that's on your to-do list.
For sure.
And not about some catnip. Are there, well, somebody's just asking, what are some of the most common flowers in making essences? But I guess that's kind of a weird question, because probably not a straight answer to it, depending on who you are and what you're doing, right?
Well, I think maybe a route we could take to answer that, or what are some of the most popular essences that are out there? So, you know, the batch remedies, the 38 remedies he created, are by far the most widely known. Of all of those, the best-selling is actually a mixture of five flowers together, and it's usually called Rescue Remedy. You can go into your average CVS or other drugstore, and you're going to find Rescue Remedy products, whether there's drops or sprays or lozenges or pastilles. And we use it for things like shock and trauma, stress in general. And the five flowers that are used to produce it are clematis, cherry plum, impatience, rock rose, and star of Bethlehem. And they kind of work very synergistically to help us just anytime we feel like we've been knocked off center. One of the other really popular ones from the batch line is walnut. Walnut is the essence of transition. Mm. We use it anytime we feel like we might need a little extra support during times of change. And if we look at the signature of the walnut tree, and especially its fruit, the nuts themselves, it's very protective. You know, you see that hard shell around the nut that kind of keeps out outside influences. And walnut can be really good for kind of bolstering our energetic defenses.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some other essences that I work with that have been really widespread in my practice are things like southern magnolia or Magnolia grandiflora, which is so deeply nurturing and anchoring and a really potent ally for change, because it helps us build upon the inertia of the past without getting knocked over by it. It helps us become more receptive and kind of undo the frenetic busyness of life to cultivate a sense of stillness. But there are literally thousands upon thousands of different essences made by different makers around the world. And, you know, depending on where they're located is obviously going to have an influence on what kind of plants they've got represented. Like if you use the Australian bushflower essences, the flora down there look very different to what I grow in my backyard here in Central Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their possums look different than ours, too. Actually, their possums are cuter than ours, but ours has faces only mothers can love. So you have to love them, too. I want to jump back to invoking plant spirits for a minute. We talked about offerings, but what can people do to get in touch with the plant spirits or the green elementals or that, you know, to realize that they're around and to get familiar with them?
I think the most important thing we can do is just slow down. Our life cycle as humans, as members of the animal kingdom, is all about movement and change and a sense of agency that is very different to what a plant's life looks like. So to really make space to get in touch with plant spirits, we have to be willing to slow down, to cut off some of the chatter, to make space for stillness. And then the next step is just observing the plant. Like, take notes. How does it grow? Where does it grow? Does it like dry soil or wet soil, full sun or partial shade? Does it stand upright? Does it sprawl outwards? What are its flowers and fruits and seeds like? How fast is its life cycle? And you know, as we kind of observe all of that with a conscious mind, it makes space on the inside for our deep conscious to kind of reach out and commune with some quality in the plant. And you might start to notice after a while that you feel a particular way when you're around a particular kind of plant. And like the next step from that might be doing something like a plant spirit attunement or doing some sort of meditation that helps you kind of connect to the inner consciousness of it. And there are a couple different versions of that in the book. I've got a really standard plant spirit attunement, and then I have another one that I really love. It's called a seed to flower meditation, where you visualize the entire life cycle of the plant. And
thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2024. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompetech.com.